Du lytter til en podcast af Third Ear for Podimo. Det her er en podcastserie i 6 afsnit for Podimo, som vi har lavet i samarbejde med RTE's Documentary on One i Irland. Og hvis du ikke har hørt de første 4 afsnit endnu, skal du stoppe her og gå tilbage. Din fortæller er Christer Moldsen.
Før vi rigtig går i gang med det her afsnit, vil jeg lige læse noget for dig. Det er en avisartikel fra The Dublin Evening Herald fra den 6. oktober 1953. Den kommer her. Den 25 år gamle og arbejdsløse Kieran Kelly blev i går arresteret på Hardcourt Street nummer 43 for at have stjålet en cello, en bue og en violin til en værdi af 75 pund. Politiinspektør Lang fortæller om arrestationen, at de stod ved tiltaltes hus, da de så ham et stykke væk på den anden side af gaden. Han opdagede imidlertid, at de var for politiet og løb hurtigt over vejen, hvorfor han blev ramt af en bil på benet. Heldigvis uden at komme synligt til skade. Tiltalte løb efterfølgende ind i området omkring Charlemont Street. Og efter at politiet havde jagtet ham 400 eller 500 yards, slap han væk. Politiinspektør Doris fandt ham senere i en boligblok, hvor han modsatte sig arrestation. Kelly blev varetægtsfængslet med en kaution på 50 pund. Den tiltaltes far sagde, at han gerne ville have ham mentalt undersøgt af en læge. At han havde opført sig underligt på det sidste. Og faderen ønskede ikke under de nuværende omstændigheder at betale kaution for sin søn.
What went through your mind after that one then, Kelly? Because you went back home after that, didn't you?
Yeah, I went back for a while, yeah.
You went away a few times over there?
Yeah, that started me panicking, like, you know.
Who did you murder, or are you a spy? I'm just fond of a drink, helps me laugh, helps me cry. No, but just drink red biddy for a permanent high. I laugh a lot less, I cry till I die. Oh, I'm a son, I give all for the price.
Kellys far siger, at han ikke vil have ham ud af fængsel, og han vil have sin søn mentalt undersøgt, fordi han har opført sig underligt på det sidste. Det ser også ud til, når man læser den her artikel, at Kelly opfører sig paranoidt. Han løber ud foran en bil, så snart han ser en politimand. Det her kunne godt ligne en mand, der er blevet forandret af et eller andet. Og datoen i 1953, det er kun et par måneder efter den dato, hvor Kelly siger, at han har dræbt sin bedste ven, Christy Smith, i Londons undergrundsbane. Men som vi hørte sidste gang, så var politiet ikke i stand til at finde nogen som helst beviser for, at en Christy Smith skulle være død i undergrundsbanen. Eller noget som helst andet sted for den sags skyld i 1953. Politiet fandt ikke engang nogen beviser på, at Christy Smith nogensinde havde eksisteret. Så ligesom politiet gjorde i 1983, så står vi over for den mulighed, at Kieran Kelly simpelthen er mentalt forstyrret. Og at Christy Smith kun er en person, som Kelly har opfundet i sin fantasi. Politimanden Ian Brown, ham i forhørsrummet, som Kelly tilstod til, han har gjort sig sine egne tanker om det her.
I think he killed Christy Smith. I think Christy Smith existed. Because that's where all the confessions start. And if that's a lie, so's everything else. And yeah, we know that Kelly always refers to Christy Smith as being the start of it all.
Så spørgsmålet er, kan vi bevise, at Christy Smith eksisterede, og på den måde bevise, at Kellys tilståelse ikke er ren fantasi?
Yeah, but that's the first, that's the big one.
That was the one that started, yeah.
Lad os se på det bedste, og faktisk det eneste bevis, vi har indtil videre, på at Smith eksisterede. Tilståelsesbåndet. Kunne der være et eller andet, som Ian Brown overså dengang?
All right, now Mr. Brown's going to ask you now about Christy Smith. And go over that again.
På det her tidspunkt, hvor Brown taler med Kelly på båndet, der ved han allerede, at de i efterforskningen ikke har kunne finde noget om Christy Smith. Så Brown prøver at få ny information ud af Kelly. Andre navne, flere detaljer. Noget, der måske kunne lede ham i den rigtige retning.
What happened to Kathleen? Never saw her again after that?
I've never seen her after that. Never seen her.
Did she know what happened?
I don't really know now.
Det ser ud til, at der var en anden person sammen med Kelly og Christy Smith. En, som var kommet sammen med dem fra Irland, en kvinde ved navn Kathleen.
And did she came from the same area, did she?
No, she came from Cork.
From Cork? That's,
yeah, from Cork.
And were they going out together?
They were going out together. She was on the game.
She was on the game?
The two of them, two boys was on the game.
What, the one that you brought over as well?
He brought the three of us over.
Der var altså to kvinder, der rejste over sammen med Kelly og Smith. De var begge to on the game, som Kelly kalder det. De var begge to prostituerede. Det var altså en lille gruppe på fire unge, der rejste over fra Irland. Kelly har været 23 på det tidspunkt. De forsøgte at leve af småkriminalitet, eller hvad de nu kunne finde på at tjene penge på. Men det ser ud til, at deres første ophold i England var i Liverpool.
Because at that time I didn't like Liverpool, because Liverpool was a bit rough at that time.
Men det fungerede ikke i Liverpool. Kelly siger, at det var for barskt for ham.
That's where all the cotton started.
Yeah.
Næste stop var Manchester, og Kelly fortæller, at de to kvinder også prøvede lykken som prostituerede der.
And in the square of Manchester, 3 o'clock in the morning, they were lessened.
Det ser ud som om, at stemningen i gruppen bliver mere og mere anspændt mellem Smith og hans kæreste Kathleen og mellem Kelly og den anden pige.
So it's all right. You're coming over with a bloke and a girl, and they're fucking arguing all the time. And you book in with them. You're sleeping in one room with them, and they're still fucking arguing. So your head starts fucking going. So you say, fuck it, I'm pulling out.
Så for at slippe for dem, tager Kelly til London. Men de andre tager bare med.
So you came down to London?
So I said, fuck it, I said, I'm away. So she said, well, I'm going with you too. So he said, I'll go too. Now, she was coming over to my side, which I fucking didn't want her.
You didn't want her?
Didn't want her, no. I could have the bunk up on her anytime I want, or the other one, but I didn't fucking want her.
Kelly fortæller, at hun bliver ved med at komme over i hans side af sengen. Og at han faktisk ville kunne være kommet i seng med begge pigerne, hvis han ville, men han var ikke interesseret.
Why, because she was on the game?
No, not really that way.
Og så på et tidspunkt i London bliver stemningen altså så anspændt, at Kelly myrder Smith på undergrundsstationen, siger Kelly.
And when you did Christy, obviously that played on your mind a lot, yeah? And that
played on my mind.
Kelly slipper afsted med mordet på Christy Smith. Han siger stille, fortæller ikke nogen noget. Men han bliver forståelig nok paranoid. Og han kommer til at tilbringe de næste mange år med at kigge sig over skulderen efter politiet.
When I see you not zipping up, I'm thinking then.
They're gonna nick you for that.
Yeah.
Kelly ved ikke, hvad der skete med Kathleen eller den anden kvinde efter det her. Han siger, at han aldrig så dem igen.
So you don't know what happened to her after that? She could have stayed in London, she could have gone back to Ireland.
She could have stayed in London, pick up, you know what prostitutes do, pick up. I don't know when she went back to Ireland, because she was in, she knew the mother-in-law, Chrissy Smith's mother-in-law. She knew Paul Smith.
Så der er altså en kvinde ved navn Kathleen, som ikke vidste, hvad der skete med Christy Smith, men som kendte hans mor. Og så en, der hed Paul Smith, som meget nemt kunne være en fra Christys familie. Politiet fulgte ikke det spor i 1983, men det har vi gjort. Når jeg siger vi, så mener jeg naturligvis hele holdet inde på RTE Doc on Runs redaktion i Irland. De har gravet i hvert eneste arkiv, der vil lukke dem ind. Og de har let efter alt, hvad de overhovedet kunne finde, der har haft den mindste forbindelse til Kelly. Og de har selvfølgelig også let efter alt, hvad de overhovedet har kunne finde om Christy Smith. Det her er journalist og dokumentarist Nicolene Greer.
I've become a little bit obsessed with finding Christy Smith over the last couple of months.
Her lige en lille note til dig, der ikke er fra Irland. Du ved muligvis ikke, at Christy er en meget almindelig irsk forkortelse af navnet Christopher. og at Smith er det mest almindelige efternavn i Storbritannien, og det er også meget almindeligt i Irland, hvilket ikke lige frem gør den her opgave nemmere.
It starts as a bit of a needle in a haystack, looking for records of Christy Smiths in Ireland and in Dublin. But if you go to the UK and start looking, it becomes a needle in a really big haystack.
For en meget lang historie kort, så leder Nicoline og resten af holdet meget grundigt. Men de finder intet, der matcher med Christy Smiths død. Hverken i London eller andre steder i Storbritannien. De fik altså det samme resultat, som politiet havde fået 1983. Så det næste, de gør, er at tage tilbage til Irland for at se, om der er mulighed for at opspore en fødselsattest. Fordi det vil i det mindste bevise, at Christy Smith har eksisteret. Kelly og Smith var venner og nogenlunde samme alder. Det ved vi. De fandt Kellys fødselsattest. Og vi ved, at han er født i 1930. Så Smith må også være blevet født lige deromkring.
Between 1927 and 1934, I found 28 Christopher Smiths.
28 Christopher Smiths bliver født i hele Irland på det her tidspunkt, men Kelly er fra Dublin, så det er Christopher Smith sikkert også.
There's 8 in Dublin, and of those 8 in Dublin, there are 4 in Dublin 8. There are assumptions that we're making here, and you know, they're dangerous things to make.
Vi behøver nu ikke at gætte os til det hele. Vi ved, at Kelly boede på Harcourt Street nummer 43 i South Central Dublin i 1953. Det læste vi nemlig i den avisartikel i starten af programmet. Så hvis Kelly og Smith var venner, så er det mere end sandsynligt, at de boede rimelig tæt på hinanden i Dublin dengang, tilbage i 1950'erne. Så nu begynder der at ske noget.
We did find one clue on the police tape. Paul Smith.
Junior Paul Smith. Junior Paul Smith.
Og så når vi til navnet Paul Smith. Kelly fortæller, at Kathleen kender Paul Smith. Der er ingen af de personer ved navn Christy Smith, som Nicoline fandt frem til, der har en far, der hedder Paul Smith. Så alt tyder på, at Paul Smith må være Christy Smiths bror. Heldigvis var Paul ikke et så almindeligt navn for en lille dreng på det her tidspunkt.
There's about 5 or 6 Paul Smiths born around that time, but what I was looking for was somebody whose mother had the same maiden name as one of the Christopher Smiths that I had found.
Det her er lidt kompliceret, for Smith er som sagt et meget almindeligt navn i Irland, og der er ikke nogen CPR-nummer. Så for at komme videre, så søger Nicoline på de her mødres pigenavne. Og hvis pigenavnene på en mor til en af de 5 personer, der hedder Paul Smith, matcher med pigenavnet til en mor af en af de 4 personer, der hedder Christopher Smith, så må de to altså være brødre.
There was Dunn and there was Hanley. So first of all, actually got the Dunn birth certificate, and no, it was a different Dunn. So the next one was Hanley, and went in and got Paul Smith, whose mother was a Hanley, got his birth certificate, and yes, it was Kathleen Hanley, the same mother as one of my Christopher Smiths. The address was the same, 12 Upper Bridge Street, Dublin 8. The father was the same, James Smith, a labourer. So this was pretty exciting.
Så vi har altså en ung mand ved navn Christy Smith, som havde en bror ved navn Paul Smith, der boede i det samme område af Dublin som Kieran Kelly. Denne Christy Smith blev født i december 1933 i en fattig familie på 7. Paul Smith var hans lillebror. Og der findes i Irland ingen dødsattest på denne her Christopher Smith, hvilket vil sige, at han ikke er død i Irland. Så sandsynligvis er han rejst væk og død et andet sted. Og der er også en sidste ting, der passer med, at Kelly og Smith skulle have kendt hinanden.
There's one more clue. There's a newspaper article that we found from 1951, which names a 17-year-old Christopher Smith in trouble with the law for stealing from a car. The dates match in terms of him being 17 in 1951 would match with his date of birth being December 1933.
Den her Christopher Smith kunne meget nemt have kendt Kieran Kelly. Det hele passer. Smith og Kelly To småkriminelle fra det fattige Dublin beslutter sig for at rejse til England sammen med to piger for at forsøge at tjene nogle penge på den ene eller den anden måde. Men det er kun Kelly, der vender tilbage til Dublin et par måneder efter. Og da han kommer tilbage, så opfører han sig underligt. Som om, at der er noget, der har forandret ham. Måske kender han stadig Christy Smiths mor og hans lillebror Paul. Måske har han rendt ind i dem på gaden, og så vil de nok have spurgt til Christy, som Kelly, og kun Kelly ved, at han har slået ihjel. Og Kelly vil have løjet og sagt, at han ikke vidste noget, men han vil have været hunderad, for at nogen skulle finde ud af noget. De tanker vil helt sikkert have givet ham paranoia. Det her er selvfølgelig kun antagelser, men vi har i det mindste nogle fakta nu, der antyder, at Kieran Kelly ikke lyver om Christy Smith. Og ligesom Ian Brown, så kan vi tro på Kelly, når han siger, at han dræbte Christy.
It had to be, in my opinion, Kelly murdered Smith. How? Where? I honestly don't know.
Men hvordan kunne Christy Smith bare forsvinde? Hvorfor bliver han ikke efterlyst? Hvorfor bliver han ikke savnet? Her er Nicoline Greer igen.
You might think that if a family with a son, just if the son just disappeared, that they would be then calling the police and putting in a missing persons record. But, you know, Ireland in that time, there was so much poverty, there was so many men were leaving Ireland and going to England to get work, further afield as well, going to America, getting on boats and going away. And, you know, it wasn't that uncommon for men to go away and to never be heard of again. You know, there was a huge amount of shame involved as well, that they had gone away and maybe life hadn't panned out the way they had wanted it to. So, you know, it's not unthinkable that a man would go to the UK, go to England or London, and that the family wouldn't necessarily hear from them again, and that they mightn't think that that was unusual. And people could just disappear off the radar, particularly single men, actually, I think it's fair to say. And that could be what happened to Christy Smith.
Så meget tyder på, at Kelly, uden at vide det og uden at planlægge det, havde valgt det perfekte offer, hvis han skulle slippe afsted med at begå et mord. Det var det samme, han gjorde igen og igen. Han dræbte en person, som ingen ville efterlyse og ingen ville savne. Og så vidt offerets familie vidste, så var han bare forsvundet ind i Londons ingenmandsland. Måske håbede familien på, at han tjente en masse penge et eller andet sted på den anden side af vandet, men Kieran Kelly vidste bedre. Kieran Kelly vidste, at han var sluppet afsted med mor.
Kelly says, I got away with it for years, and ultimately I thought, well, who cares if I kill somebody? Doesn't matter. I've got away with it. And what had he got away with? Christy Smith. It all goes, everything goes back to Christy Smith.
Det hele går tilbage til Christy Smith. Der er et før og et eftermordet på Christy Smith i 1953. Og her er, hvad vi ved om Kellys livshistorie fra arkiverne. Vi ved, at Kelly blev født i Rathdowney i det centrale Irland i 1930. Og at familien herefter flyttede til Dublin, og han blev konfirmeret i en kirke i Dublin, da han var 12 år gammel. Vi ved også, at han meldte sig til den britiske hær, da han var 18 år gammel, til det irske vagtregiment. Han blev smidt ud af hæren i 1951 efter at have været fraværende uden orlov. Efter 1953, efter mordet på Smith, så begynder fængselsstraffene. Tre fængselsstraffe i Irland i løbet af 1950'erne. Han fik 2 år for det tyveri, han begik i 1953, som vi læste om i avisartiklen. Og han fik 9 måneder lige efter for over 40 tyverier og indbrud i 1956. I 1957 blev han arresteret igen og fik yderligere 2 års fængsel. I 1960, da han er 30 år gammel, forlader Kelly definitivt Irland og rejser til England. Der begynder det at gå lidt bedre for Kelly. Vi har fundet ud af, at Kelly blev gift i 1971 i Camberwell i London med en irsk kvinde. Hans ægteskab var usædvanligt for den tid, for kvinden var fraskilt og havde allerede 5 børn, inklusiv en nyfødt baby. Men Kelly tog opgaven på sig og blev forsørger i huset. Og senere fik han selv 2 børn med kvinden. I den periode virker det til, at Kelly er lovlydig. Han forsørger en familie på 7 børn, og han begår ingen kriminalitet i en periode på 4 år. I hvert fald ikke noget, han bliver taget for. Men i 1964 så ser det ud som om, at Kellys ægteskab går galt, og Kelly bliver smidt ud. I løbet af resten af 1960'erne er der mange lovovertrædelser. Mest for at være fuld eller for tyveri. Kelly ender til sidst på Broadmoor Psykiatriske Hospital i 1969, efter at have angrebet en kvinde i hendes hjem med en kniv. Han fylder 40 på Broadmoor. Og de lukker ham ud igen efter 2 år i 1971, står der. Sådan lyder Kellys livshistorie indtil starten af 70'erne, hvis man læser, hvad der står i arkiverne. Det er hovedsageligt en liste over alle de ulovlige ting, som Kelly har gjort, og som han er blevet taget for. Men det er selvfølgelig på ingen måde en fuldkommen beskrivelse af ham. Der mangler stadig den anden side af manden. Den side af ham, som du kun kender, hvis du rent faktisk har kendt Kieran Kelly. Uden for retsvæsenet, uden for politistationerne.
You know, when he was sober, let's say now he hadn't a drink for a day or two, and he walked in here, you couldn't ask us to speak to a nicer fella.
Og vi har fundet en mand, der kendte en helt anden side af Kieran Kelly.
And he was polite when he was sober. But when he had a drink or two, he's a different human being altogether. You know, chalk and cheese, or what's the other phrase people use? Oh, the guy that, what's his name, Jekyll and Hyde. He was a typical Jekyll and Hyde.
Der er en sær grund til, at det faktisk lykkedes os at finde den her mand. Hans navn er Brian Sliman. Han er murer og irsk, og har boet og arbejdet i det sydlige London siden slutningen af 1960'erne. Det sære er, at det også er den mand, som journalist og dokumentarist Robert Mulhern ringede til, da han skulle have lavet noget murarbejde i sit hus. Det skete sidste år. Her er Rob igen til at forklare, hvad der skete.
He's doing the job on the house, finishes the job. Me and my wife say, listen, let's bring him out for dinner and just thank him for the work.
På poppen begynder de at fortælle hinanden historier.
He goes, I'll tell you another one. I actually worked with a guy who got sent down for a double murder. Hold on a minute, what was his name? He kind of stopped and he was like, his name was Ken. I was like, Ken who? He was like, Ken Kelly. And I was like, Ken Kelly? You mean Kieran Kelly? And he was like, yeah, Kieran Kelly, Ken Kelly, Mad Ken.
Det er en helt bizar tilfældighed. Efter alt Robs research, og efter alt hans hårde arbejde med at efterforske Kelly, så dukker Sliman bare op ud af ingenting. Rob og Sliman ser på hinanden et øjeblik.
And he was like, how do you know Kieran Kelly? And I was like, well, how do you know Kieran Kelly? I was like, I'm making a documentary about him. I've been searching for years for somebody who knew him. And he was like, well, I knew Ken. He worked for me for 4 years. We were just quiet for a second and like, I think I had my iPhone there and I brought up a portrait picture of Kelly, like head and shoulders image, and Sliman was like, that's him, yeah, that's him.
Et par dage senere tager Rob hjem til Brian Sliman med sin mikrofon for at høre historien om den mand, som Brian Sliman beskriver som en rigtig Jekyll og Hyde karakter.
Is Brian here, is he?
Yeah, hang on a sec. Yeah, it looks like you got BBC News here, yeah. Guy from Microphone here.
Brian Sliman husker tydeligt den allerførste gang, han mødte Kieran Kelly. Det var en gang i de tidlige 1970'ere. Det har ikke været længe efter, at Kelly var blevet sluppet ud af Broadmoors psykiatriske hospital.
First time, yeah, I was in a house in Balham again. And we were stripping out, some of the lads were stripping out, and there was dust everywhere. So I went, it was summertime, I went out for a cigarette. And I was by the front gate, and we just had a skip delivered. So I'm having a cigarette, covered in dust. And this racket 3 doors up from me. A guy boxing, punching. a hoarding around a house that was derelict. And he's battering the fence, which was covered in galvanised. And I said, and he looked at me. He walked down, he stood in front of me, hair down in his eyes, hands clenched, red in the face. He said, any work going here? And I said, can you fill escape? He said, yes. I said, be here 8 o'clock in the morning. And I chucked my cigarette in the bin, just in the skip, and I walked back into the house. Anyway, he went away, disappeared. The next morning, and about 7:45, I got to the house, and here he was sitting outside the house. I thought, that's not the guy from yesterday, because he's totally different. And he quite smiled. He says, we met yesterday. Is the work still on? I said, okay then. So I took him in, told him what he had to do. Filled up a skip, took out the plaster off the walls, rotted floorboards to come out.
Uden at særlig store forhåbninger vendte Sleiman tilbage senere samme dag for at tjekke op på Kellys arbejde.
Went down to the job, and there I got to the job. You're sitting, having a cigarette. And the skip was full. I mean, way above, really filled. I couldn't believe it when I seen it. When I walked into the house, I said, you should have finished it. This was gone 6 o'clock now. That time we worked from 8 to 6. I said, you should have gone at 6. No, he said, I was just having myself a cigarette. I couldn't believe inside. He had his clean, and he had tidied up the garden. I couldn't believe it. He'd done 3 days' work. Everything was as neat and as clean as a whistle. So that's how he started working for me.
Sleiman er typen, der giver en person en chance, hvis de er i stand til at lægge en god dags arbejde, og Kelly har lige lagt 3 dages arbejde på en. Så Kelly er inde i varmen.
He was a good worker. The only thing, I couldn't leave him on his own, because half he'd be gone. But while he was with me, he was always on time, clean, doing a good day's work, but just couldn't leave him on his own. Never worked. I'd done it a few times, and he'd gone to the pub, and that'd be it.
Da Sleiman mødte Kelly, var han ikke klar over, at Kelly havde siddet i fængsel mange gange, selvom han måske godt kunne have gættet det.
And I've seen once or twice where he was, he had a black eye where he got into trouble over weekends and things like that, but it didn't seem to bother him.
I løbet af de næste par år arbejder Kelly regelmæssigt for Sleiman, og Sleiman lærer ham godt at kende. Han inviterer ham ovenikøbet hjem flere gange, og Sleimans børn er også ret vilde med ham.
Every child liked him for some reason. Even my eldest son. He said, I thought he was okay. Of all the people who used to come to the house, because in them days, I had lots of people, bloke coming, you know, different types of workers. But Ken, he was always liked, and all young kids liked him. And he loved kids. You'd never dream of thinking he'd harm anybody. That's the type of guy he was.
I mean, he sounded very charming.
Oh, he could be very charming.
Kelly var også ret populær blandt sine arbejdskammerater. Især nede på pubben, efter arbejde.
He used to do a party piece in pubs where, you know, people get up and just do a song or something.
Yeah.
But he used to imitate me all the hair. He'd commentate on a football match.
His most pulsating moment. Leaves Paddy Meagan, races down the wing, dodges his way through. A hard shot towards the goal. Morris saves, but Bill Hastie is in, and the ball is in the net for a goal that put me on the highway.
He had all the, and he'd make the offer as he said he was going along. That was his party piece. People used to beg him to go up and do it. But if he was too drunk, he wouldn't be able to do it. So you had to get him at the right time, you know what I mean.
Will he be satisfied with the point, with that line of defense in front of him at this stage of the game? I'm sure he will. Let's wait and see.
Sleiman lærte begge sider af Kelly at kende. Hans Jekyll og Hyde personlighed. Han husker især en gang, hvor Kelly fuldstændig mistede besindelsen. Kelly lå i bunden af et hul, hvor de var i gang med at grave en tunnel ind under et hus for at finde et rør, der var sprunget. Han lå lige under faldstammen til alle badeværelserne og alle toiletterne i et lille lejlighedskompleks.
And on the toilet seats, I had put a notice, please do not flush until these signs are removed. One of the ladies on the first floor used the loo and flushed it, and he's down in the hole. And he couldn't escape from it, right down on top of him. And he started screaming. Now, he wasn't drunk or anything. He was absolutely foaming at the mouth. I had to hold him down the hole with a shovel. So the husband came out, and the husband, he was a big fat fella, and he's screaming down at him. And I pushed him. I said, please get away to hell out of here. I said, get indoors, lock the damn door. Because I knew this man had lost it completely. Now looking back, he wanted to kill them.
Sleiman er heldigvis en stor mand, og han var bevæbnet med en skovl. Kelly var en tynd og en lille mand, og han befandt sig i bunden af et meget mudret hul, så Slimen kunne holde ham ned i hullet med skovlen, indtil han var faldet ned.
And when he cooled down, I had to leave him down there for half an hour, because I thought he might even kill me. He was foaming. Eventually, I got him to quieten down and got him out of the hole. But that night, I'm convinced now, knowing what you've told me what he's been accused of, that if I hadn't been there and he got out of the hole, he would have killed him, I think. I've never seen a man in that anger as he was that night. Because he was a tough, he wasn't a big fella, but he was a tough cookie. You mean, he was no pushover, as they say. So I'm looking back and I'm thinking, did they actually save their lives? I probably did.
Slimans indgriben den dag har helt sikkert reddet alle fra en meget farlig Kelly. Der var bogstaveligt talt frode om munden på ham af vrede. Men alt var nu ikke kun skidt for Kelly. Det ser ud til, at Kelly også havde kvindetække. Slimans husker en gang, Kelly fik sig manøvreret ind i en komfortabel situation med en kvinde, der boede lige ved siden af en af deres arbejdspladser.
So you had to dig a hole again. And I had to go away. I said, look, I won't be back later. And when I got back, the tools were there. The hole was covered, and his Wellingtons. But no sign of him. So I searched. I went, where could he have gone to? Especially without, I know he had no shoes with him. So down to the local pub. No sign of him. I thought, where has he gone to? He can't have gone home without his Wellingtons. Anyway, I went back to the job, and I seen the lady looking out from next door, an elderly lady, I thought. So I knocked. She came to the door and said, you haven't seen the guy that was working here today. Oh, yes, he's in here. He's having some tea. So she brought me in. There he was sitting at the table. She had given him dinner. He wasn't drinking tea, he was having a beer. I couldn't believe it. So he says, I've moved in here. So they're shacked up together. A nice looking woman. I mean, you wouldn't have put the two of them together if you'd seen them. But she was an alcoholic, I think.
Oh, mother dear, I'm over here. I never will come back. What keeps me here is the rank of beer, the ladies, and the crack.
Det her er til sydenladende en ret typisk Kelly-historie. Han charmerer sig ind et eller andet sted og slår sig ned sammen med en kvinde. Men så går der ikke ret lang tid, før Kelly må rykke videre.
That a big falling out, shouldn't let him in. So he took the hose pipe off, pushed into the letterbox. He turned the hose pipe on, and full blast went into the flat. He hadn't been back after that. That was the last time he went there. That's the type of, you know what I mean? He'd be sober now when he'd done that.
Kelly havde det med at forsvinde en gang imellem. Og så dukkede han op igen, nogle uger eller nogle måneder senere, klar til at arbejde for Slimen igen. Slimen gik bare ud fra, at han havde været på druk. Han var faldet i sammen med nogen, han kunne drikke sammen med. Men det, der er virkelig svært at forstå, ikke mindst for Brian Slimen i dag, det er, at Kelly begik mord i de perioder, hvor han var væk. Det var i den tid, hvor han arbejdede for Slimen, at Kelly først blev arresteret af politiet i forbindelse med mordet på Hector Fisher. Men det lykkedes Kelly dengang at slippe. Han skiftede tøj, og han benægtede alt over for politiet. Mordet på Hector Fisher var i 1975. Men Kelly tilstod på båndet, at han begik tre mord tilbage i 1973. Alle tre var mord på ukendte og hjemløse mænd, som han havde tævet ihjel eller stukket ned. Alt det foregik, mens han arbejdede for Slimen. Hans andet, tredje, fjerde og femte mord, uden at Slimen mærkede noget som helst på ham. Kelly var god til sit Dr. Jekyll og Mr. Hyde-nummer. Men der er én begivenhed, som fandt sted på den her tid, der virkelig skiller sig ud for Slimen. Kelly havde boet sammen med en anden kvinde, indtil de også blev uvenner på grund af et eller andet med kvindens datter.
The woman he stayed with, her daughter, passed some comments on Ken. And there's a guy there used to work for a chocolate firm. And he had a van. He used to park his van in there. And Ken got drunk. Spotted man with a chocolate van. And I know that he threatened him, but your man was scared of him, I think. And he took him out to Reading.
Kelly var fuld og rasende, og han tvang en chauffør af en chokoladeleverancebil til at køre ham til Reading, som ligger lidt uden for London.
Gets to the house in Reading, and he went up, and he smashed through the front door to the glass door, and he smashed that. And he wrapped the TV around her neck.
Kelly opfører sig fuldstændig vanvittigt i den her situation. Han vikler kablet fra en TV-antenne omkring kvindens hals. Og heldigvis lykkes det for hendes mand at ringe til politiet, og de ankommer, før han når at dræbe hende.
So they're arresting him, and as they're taking him out, he got into a fight with the police.
Men Kelly lader sig ikke bare anholde, han tager kampen op med politiet.
And they got him into a pandy car, and he kicked the two side windows out of the pandy car. And he went to court, and during the hearing, he jumped over the dock and pulled the cape off the judge. And then the police arrested him again, and on the way down to the cell, he broke a sergeant's arm. But not long, he was back out again, came back to me looking for work. I thought you'd have got 20 years for that. I said, no, I got out of it all right. I think 3 weeks he was away, or something like that. Maybe a bit longer, but it wasn't long. And I says, how did you get away with it? He said, no, they let me out. It's only after the dawn I got to know that he was on recall to Broadmoor.
Kelly røg tilbage til Broadmoor, til det lukkede psykiatriske hospital. Og det virker måske mærkeligt, at Kelly slap ud af Broadmoor igen så hurtigt. Men det er nok Dr. Jekyll og Mr. Hyde igen. Kelly var formodentlig i stand til at overbevise psykiateren på Broadmoor om, at han var faldet ned, og at han havde kontrol over sig selv. Men Kellys selvkontrol, den varede ikke evigt. Den sidste gang Kelly arbejdede for Slejman var på et tidspunkt hen mod slutningen af 1970'erne. Det var på en opgave, hvor Slejman og hans bror skulle lægge et tag for en ældre kvinde et sted i et dyrt kvarter uden for London. Og de havde, som så mange gange før, taget Kelly med som arbejdsmand.
I picked him up. He was living this time now in Fulham. Oh, about 5 in the morning, I think. Half 5 in the morning, I picked him up. And he was a bit pissed from the night before. Took him down to the job and started ripping off the roof, getting ready. So I had to drive into the town to the builder's yard to get something. When I got up back to the job, I said, where's Ken? He said, I sent him home. He's no good to us. He said, you wasted time. 20 minutes later, the lady came out. She says, Mr. Slimer, somebody stole my purse. And I said, what? My purse has gone missing. And I think, well, she's mislaid because she's an elderly woman. Oh, I said, I doubt that. I said, no, but there's only us three. And she said, well, I had it. I put it in my handbag on my bedside cabinet. Anyway, I said, I'll go and look for it. And she knows that there's three of us, so I got to get him back. So if I get him back, at least I can cover myself. Not for one second did I think that he'd have done something like this. Not for one second.
Velvidende, at Kelly kunne finde på at pjekke fra jobbet og gå på pub, så kørte Slejman en runde forbi alle pubberne i nabolaget. Men han kunne ikke finde Kelly. Lige ind til...
Next thing I spotted him coming, making for the station. So I jumped out of the van and... Oh, I said, Ken, how are you feeling? Oh, no, he said, I decided to go home. I don't feel well. Well, I said, before you go home, you got to come back. He said, oh, no, I can't go back. He said, I don't feel well. Well, I said, you have to come back. I said, the woman's accused of stealing the purse. Please come back. Then I'll drive you back. But you have to come. He said, I'm not going back. On reflection, I shouldn't have said this to him, but I said, look, Ken, dead or alive, you're coming back. Whether you like or not, you got to come back. You owe me that. So you're coming back now. Believe me, you're coming back. So eventually you've agreed. Anyway, get back to the house. And there's a policeman there, sergeant. I said, Ken, empty your pockets. So he took off the money and just nailed it to the coin, but was missing. So I said, now, Ken, look, now get, tell the truth now. He denied it. Now this money nearly matched what the lady lost. He decided to arrest him. Out to the car, he had the handcuffs on him. And as he got open the back door of the car to get him in, I said, Ken, before you get into that car, I can help you now, but the second that door is closed, there's nothing I can do for you. We can sort this out here and now before it goes too far. Next thing, he's crying. So I tell the truth, yes. And Ken got arrested and took off to Nick. But that was the last time he worked for me.
Det er underligt at forestille sig Kieran Kelly, der sidder og græder bag en politibil. Efter at være blevet arresteret for en så relativt lille lovovertrædelse. Især når man tænker på, at Kelly allerede på det her tidspunkt har myrdet flere mennesker. Men Kelly må have vidst, at han har ødelagt sin måske eneste chance her. At han sandsynligvis aldrig igen vil møde en så generøs, tilgivende og venlig arbejdsgiver som Brian Slimen. Det ser ud til, at Kellys rute på vej mod permanent hjemløshed starter omkring den her tid. Slimen skulle møde ham en gang mere i sit liv. denne gang tilfældigt på en pub. Men på det tidspunkt var Kelly ikke mere end en skygge af sig selv.
I didn't see him for a long time. And I'm one side of this bar here. And as I'm walking down the channel, who walked the other side was Ken, and he stopped. We looked at each other. But he walked away, and I thought, we never spoke. That was the last I seen. That's a long time back.
Det sidste møde mellem Slyman og Kelly var flere år efter, at han var holdt op med at arbejde for Slyman. I løbet af de år har Kelly været fængslet mange gange. Han har boet på gaden, han har drukket husholdningssprit på kirkegård, og han har myrdet endnu flere mennesker. På det tidspunkt var Kelly allerede blevet arresteret og anklaget for mordet på Edward Toll. Det hørte vi om i det sidste afsnit. Han blev anklaget for at have kvalt Toll. Og der var to vidner, som havde set ham gøre det. Men på det tidspunkt var han stadig i stand til at være overbevisende i retten. Da han optrådte i retten, var han fattet. Han var ædru, nybarberet og med pænt tilbagekæmmet hår. Faktisk fortælles det, at han stod ret op og ned og sagde yes sir og no sir, som han gjorde, da han var soldat i sin ungdom. Hvorimod vidnerne mod Kelly, de dukkede op i retten efter at have drukket en flaske husholdningssprit. Og som vi ved, så faldt sagen mod Kelly fra hinanden. Da Kelly når 50 års alderen, har han myrdet helt op til 12, 13 eller 14 mennesker. Og han er sunket meget dybt ind i det, vi kalder ingenmandsland.
And what do you feel now when you do one? I mean, does anything go through your mind, or don't you care anymore?
Doesn't worry me.
Doesn't worry you?
No.
Do you think I'm going to do a murder, or do
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I would.
Huh?
I would now.
What, today?
No, I get up and walk away. Because I know now I'm serious.
Kelly siger på båndet, at han føler sig lettet over at have tilstået sine forbrydelser. Ian Brown mener, at Kelly måske endda har følt sig lettet over at skulle i fængsel resten af sit liv.
And one of the other things that's come across my mind is that, you know, when Kelly got caught banged to rights in the cell, I think it went through his mind, you know, I'm going away for life. And there's nothing much I can do about it, but having a bed every night and a pillow and a blanket and a mattress and food ain't gonna be such a bad thing. It's actually a big improvement on what I've got now. And I think it was, you know, some of it was relief that I'm going somewhere safe.
Kelly kom i fængsel på livstid i 1984. Og derefter finder der et par markante begivenheder sted. Den ene har at gøre med den familie, som han efterlod. Han så aldrig ret meget til sine børn, efter han rejste fra dem i 1964. Vi kontaktede hans datter, men hun vil ikke interviews til den her podcast. Og vi forsøgte også at opspore Kellys andet barn, som blev født lige før Kelly rejste i 1964. Men Kellys søn døde i en alder af kun 25 år i 1989. Han blev dræbt i en slåskamp på en pub i Clapham, meget tæt på det sted, hvor Kelly havde myrdet Hector Fischer, og kun få hundrede meter fra det sted, hvor han til sidst blev arresteret. Den anden vigtige begivenhed fandt sted i 1993, da en mand i Rath Downey midt i Irland gravede et hul i sin have. Haven hørte til det hus, der engang havde været Kieran Kellys barndomshjem, og det var det, manden fandt i hullet, han gravede, der er interessant. Han fandt noget, der så ud til at være et skelet. Et kranie med en stålwire rundt om halsen. Og det bliver vi nødt til at se lidt nærmere på næste gang i Ingenmandsland.
Ingenmandsland er produceret af Third Ear for Podimo i samarbejde med RTE Docon One i Irland. Den er skrevet af Tim Henman og Krista Molsen, og det er Krista, der fortæller historien. Idé og research var af Robert Mulhern, Ronan Kelly og Liam O'Brien, med produktionassistancer fra Sarah Blake, Donald O'Herlihy, Tim Desmond, Nicolina Greer og Michael Lawless. Originalmusik til serien er lavet af mig, Du hørte også sang Missing You fra den irske sanger Christy Moore. Ingenmandsland er distribueret eksklusivt i Danmark af Podimo, og tak til teamet på Podimo, fordi de gør det her muligt. Og til sidst, husk nu, at hvis du kan lide, hvad du har hørt, så send det endelig videre.